Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We are going to take a look at a new book out that's just out. It's called Microbia. Why do I want to say it wrong every time? Microbia, a journey into the unseen world around you. Every day there's talk and headlines about how the gut microbiome is making you skinny, or maybe it's making you fat. Bacteria lurking on your toothbrush or your toilet seat or whatever. And so there's a lot of, frankly, there tends to be more concern than anything about that world, that unseen world around us. And Eugenia Bone has done a great job in her new book of bringing it sort of to life for us. And again, her book is Microbia, a journey into the unseen world around you. Eugenia is a critically acclaimed nature and food writer. Her books include Mycophilia, Revelations from the Weird World of Mushrooms, including her latest book, Microbia. Eugenia Bone, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
You know, the last time we talked, it was 2011. We looked it up.
Wow.
I looked it up. Or no, I didn't. Jill did.
Wow.
That's a long time. Yeah, well, we were talking about your other book.
Yeah, and you keep rocking.
And so do you. And I tell you what, I really did enjoy your book a lot. By the way, she went back to college to learn more about those microbes. How the heck... talk about how you got interested in... Well, first, maybe, can you define a microbe?
Yeah, a microbe is an organism that is too small to see with the human eye. You need a microscope to see it. Microbia, my book, talks about all these different kinds of microbes in the plant kingdom, the animal kingdom, but most especially the bacterium.
Yeah.
Which is a microbe of humongous import.
Yeah. Why did you think you had to go back to college to learn more about microbiology?
Larry, I thought I could teach myself. I started out reading the secondary sources, you know, books that that microbiologists had written and their scientific papers, but it was just a swamp. I mean, I just couldn't get through the material. I didn't have the language skills to translate all the jargon. And yet, there wasn't a whole lot of material out there that translated for me. I mean, there's great books to be read, but nothing that... made the linkages between, say, the microbiome of soil, the microbiome of plants, and the microbiome of animals that I was kind of excited to understand. So I had to develop the language of biology. I mean, I was an English major in the Reagan era. So I had this huge, mountain to overcome in order to read the abstracts, the scientific papers that I knew I had to read. So that's why I went back to school. Was it easy? No. Not at 55, not with my aging brain. It was challenging in lots of different ways, including culturally. But on the other hand, was it, incredibly inspiring? And did it help me sort of think better about my own capabilities? Absolutely.
Well, it's, some of the book is absolutely hilarious. Laugh out loud.
Great.
I advise students there and teach on the UW campus, and I've occasionally, I'll have someone of sort of your era, age or around your age who comes back to school, and the stories that you tell in that are strikingly similar to the stories I hear from those students.
I imagine it's universal. They call middle-aged students that go back to school re-entry students, which sort of makes me feel like the space shuttle, which I don't think is operating anymore. So certainly it was a, you know, comedy of errors in some ways. You know, was I like Lucy Goes to Columbia? Kind of. But on the other hand, you know, once I got over sort of the fact that that I was from a very different tribe than the vast majority of my classmates, I really felt the incredible joy and inspiration of being back in an academic environment.
Yeah, it's really a great place to be. It's great on the teacher side too, and the professor side too. I can tell you that for sure. Well, why do you think it's so important for everyone to understand those bacteria, microbiology?
Well, you know, I think that we are, I think it's pretty safe to say that we are in an age of discovery. But what the new world we're discovering is one that's unseen. And the culture of that unseen world is, you know, functions in this very abstract way for most of us. We can't see it. We can't see a lot of what's going on in the microbial world, so it makes it particularly hard to understand. At the same time, all the new science, this new age of discovery, is showing us that microbial life, let's say the bacteria that live in our colon, affect our well-being every day. And those headlines that are coming out that you mentioned at the top of the show that were, you know, they're just astonishing how the gut microbiome interacts with all of these different diseases, including mental illnesses. You know, to get a grip on the new science that's coming out, to understand the new discoveries of this new world, and not have any way to really understand it for yourself and be able to separate the baloney from the true breakthroughs, the true big news, seemed to me like I needed to learn a little microbiology so that I could speak the language of the future. I mean, I'm just a normal person, so I tried to write, I mean, say normal person, not that scientists are abnormal, they're super normal. But in my case, I just wanted to have enough of the language of, enough familiarity with microbiology to be able to navigate what's happening, you know, all the news and stuff that's happening in the world today. And, you know, I think I achieved that. I feel like I can read a headline and say, oh, that sounds like a lot of hoo-ha. On the other hand, I can see something that I really will understand is monumentous. Elio Schachter, a wonderful microbiologist, said to me once, Eugenia, half the world is microbial. If you don't know a little microbiology, you can't know half of yourself.
Yeah, that is very, very true. And I have to tell you, I was thinking back to my days of sitting in my first bacteriology class as an undergraduate, and I've learned that I think I forgot everything after reading your book, because your book was such more. I learned so much from reading your book. That I felt like but by that many years ago, things have changed so much.
Oh, they have.
Even in the last 20 years or 25 years,
well,
in terms of our knowledge.
The microbiome wasn't even coined until something like 25 years ago. Hmm.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. Well, we're constantly, you know, we're always being told to be afraid of germs, and that's certainly, I think your views on that may have changed or may have been more enlightened after you learned more about them.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's just my day-to-day is so affected by understanding the role of microbes and let's say bacteria in particular in nature. For example, I live in New York City. I used to hold the subway pole with like two fingers, you know, and I'd be wobbling around risking falling, but I was afraid that I'd pick up some kind of, you know, lethal bacteria. I'd get home and I'd slather myself with antibacterial liquids, you know, my hand sanitizers. Well, now, as a result of understanding that the vast majority of bacteria that are floating around in subways is basic human skin bacteria, same stuff that I have, made me say, well, what am I being so afraid of? I mean, yeah, holding the subway pole with your whole hand is like shaking hands with a million New Yorkers, but they're not that different from me. And likewise, I don't use those hand sanitizers anymore, because what hand sanitizers do is, you know, yeah, they may get that one little odd plague bacterium that might be floating around on there, but it's what it's really doing is wiping clean all of the commensal bacteria, the bacteria that aren't doing any harm and are actually maybe doing a lot of good by filling all the niches on my hands, so there's no room for a pathogenic bacteria to actually get a foothold.
For a bad one to get in there. And you know, it's interesting to think about the way you describe them as almost like clouds of bacteria just floating around all of us.
I know.
At all times.
That's a cool idea, right? This is a bunch of studies have been done on this subject, and I was fascinated with it. The idea that we are shedding, living and dead, and, you know, in various states, microbes all the time off our body, from our skin and our hair and our various orifices. And the more time people spend together, say, in a family with children and dogs, kissing, licking them and stuff, the more they stay together, the more homogenized those different microbial clouds become. And it's even a way, in my mind, to define a family, because it's a particular homogenization of bacterial clouds, each one unique to the individual in the family, although we all have a baseline as a species, right, of certain microbes that are true to us. But beyond that, we have unique microbiota that are typical of our, I don't know, bathing habits and stuff like that, gender, things like that.
Well,
but as a family, we can homogenize, and it's so interesting to think that
that can happen. I tell you what,
yes.
Hold that thought, because we're going to take a quick break here. Our guest today, Eugenia Bone, she is the author of a fascinating new book and a fun one. It's called Microbia, A Journey into the Unseen World Around You. We'll be back after the news. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller taking a look today at the unseen world around us. Microbes, they're everywhere. And our guest talks about how they shape our world and our day-to-day life and how they connect us to everything. And she does it in her book. Her name is Eugenia Bone. Her new book is Microbia, A Journey into the Unseen World Around You. Looking for your questions or comments today. What do you want to know about microbes or about bacteria? The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Certainly love to hear from you as we visit today with Eugenia Bone. And Eugenia, you know, we have a caller online, Dave and Slinger, and I think we'll just go right there with a question. David, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My name's David. I'm also a family physician, and I just remember in medical school learning about bacteria all over our body. There are other little bugs and parasites that help keep us clean and healthy. And somehow we got into this germophobic thing, even though we know that kids, for example, they grow up on farms where there's all kinds of stuff from animals, had fewer infections. And we've learned also that kids that are kept squeaky clean get sick more. So I'm glad to see this going back to where it should be.
You're going to enjoy this book, David. Eugenia, you write a lot about that.
Yeah, it's really, it's so interesting because we sort of pegged bacteria as bad for us. I mean, and it makes sense the way in the history of bacteriology, you know, the way we learned about bacteria was through them as disease, as causing disease, right? As being agents of disease. But as science has developed and we have learned more, we're realizing that it's only a percentage of bacteria that cause disease. And actually, quite a few of them are very, very useful. In fact, evolutionary partners for us. So for us to throw out the baby in the bathwater is a big mistake. Just as the caller pointed out, the kids who get exposed to bacteria in the soil and in their environment tend to have less immune reactions, allergies, and asthma, and things like that. So, you know, the what's really kind of key is this notion of diversity. We need a diversity of microorganisms in and on us to protect us from a range of possible afflictions, changes in our diet, changes in our environment. So more bacteria is actually better.
Yeah. David, thanks so much. Appreciate your call. And you mentioned soil, and there's some place you write about soil in the book and the relationship between microbes and their effect on the well-being of soil. You even said the smell of soil is actually the smell of a microbe.
Yeah, it's the byproduct of a bacterium that's a very common soil bacteria.
How do microbes affect the soil?
Well, let me put it this way. Without microbes, soil is dirt.
Yeah.
With microbes, I mean, healthy, fertile soil is living and dying microbial life on a matrix of minerals. Soil particles are held together by microbial life. All of these important nutrient cycles, like the nitrogen cycling, carbon sequestration in soil, all of that is conducted by microbes.
It's fascinating. And microbes, they don't act as individuals. This was something that was really interesting to me, but they are kind of a collective.
I know, that's super, super interesting to me too. But if you think about it, how often does someone even say the word bacterium in the singular?
No.
They're ultimately plural organisms. One little plague bacterium floating around, let's say on that subway pole that I was holding this morning, isn't going to be able to do much. But a quorum of bacteria can. When there's enough of them present and they're able to turn on genes as a collective in order to present virulence or to do different functions that protect the bacterial group. They're called biofilms. And these biofilms, they can really act much like a community. They will, you know, protect themselves from other, you know, invading species, and they'll share genes that are useful for their continuing existence. You know, like maybe there's a spray of Lysol coming, they can share the news. So there's Lysol on one side of the community, so the rest needs to prepare themselves. It's really amazing to think that there's this unseen world is really functioning as a complete ecology at all times.
Yeah, that was fascinating to me. Anne in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance to join in. Hi, Anne. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for calling, Anne. What's on your mind?
Well, you were talking about soils and the good microbes in those, and I'm just wondering if she's done any research about how all the pesticides we put on the farmlands are killing actually the good microbials. They basically work as like a hand sanitizer and kill all the good stuff.
She does write about that. Go ahead, Eugenia.
Anyway, the caller's totally got it. That's absolutely what's happening when we use the let's say fungicide, right? Living between the cells of all plants are these microscopic fungi. They're called endophytic fungi, and they provide important defense services. They help the plant tolerate stresses like droughts or high temperatures. But when you use fungicides, okay, you're trying to kill a fungus, and fungus are primary, and they are pathogens of plants. There are some that are terrible pathogens of plants. But like any antibiotic use, there's a lot of collateral damage. If the if fungal endophytes are also being killed, then you're undermining the health of the plant in the long run. So it's like a double-edged sword. It's sort of the scenario is of in agriculture and the use of pesticides and tilling, glyphosate, all that is more complicated because of cascading effects to other organisms in the ecology.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for that call. Kim in East Troy, we'll turn to you for a little different topic. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I had two stem cell transplants, and so in that process, they wipe out your whole immune system. Everything is gone in regard to even vaccines, childhood vaccines and things like that. So now as an adult, how do I reintroduce bacteria and exposures and things like that without getting sick?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not an MD, but based on this kind of overall understanding of the microbial role in the human gut, my go-to place would be to try to in your gut, what you feed is what succeeds. So I would try to feed those fiber fermenters that protect your gut lining, the lining of your colon, that keep inflammation at bay and that produce a lot of important molecules that are necessary for your body to make things like neurotransmitters and hormones. So fiber would set you up, hopefully, well. Unfortunately, it seems like it's not that simple. Sometimes, you know, there's this element of the gut microbiota that's based on succession, like you have to have the first colonizing bacteria in there, and then they make room for a second wave or mature microbiome. So you're kind of out of luck in that respect. But you know, don't go until you start to build a nice, diverse microbiota based on eating lots of healthy foods. And that doesn't mean you don't have to eat meat. You know, you can. It's just fiber, whole grain breads, fermented foods like homemade fermented foods, sauerkrauts and kimchi and yogurt. All of these are support species in your gut that are healthy for your colon health. But it's a complex problem I don't know what to say except, you know, best of luck and eat a lot of fresh vegetables.
Well, yeah, you actually talk about, it's sort of like the Mediterranean diet you were describing there, and you write about that in the book.
Yeah, I do, because, you know, the notion of like a silver bullet, like if you just take this one bacteria, you know, as a probiotic, or you eat this one food like turmeric, it's going to solve what is ultimately systemic problems, is just wrong thinking. I mean, unfortunately, the sort of hard, slow way is the way. So when it comes to diet, you have these diverse species of fiber fermenters that are living on a mucus layer, which is on top of your colon wall cell, which is only one cell thick. And those fiber fermenters they cue the cells of your colon to produce mucus, which you need to protect your bloodstream from any pathogens that could leak through. Leaky gut is when there's little loose junctions between the cells of your colon cell wall and a bald spot where there's no mucus that's sort of prophylactic on top of the cell wall, because there's no bacteria sitting on top queuing the whole operation. So if you eat a lot of fiber and a lot of variety, the more different plants, the better. So you have a big variety of fiber fermenters in your colon, then the benefits, the overall benefits are, you know, less inflammation, which, you know, in the inflammation, constant gut inflammation leads to problems like obesity and diabetes. So that constant fiber is supporting your health on a much bigger, on a much more systemic level. Indeed, those fiber fermenters, some of them also produce byproducts that you need to make serotonin. So there's a correlation between low fiber diets, or say low fiber fermenting microbial populations in the colon and depression, which is pretty far out. So the Mediterranean diet's like good for your body, and it's also good for your mind.
And just sort of an aside to that, microbes, you talk about how microbes may influence food cravings.
Yeah, isn't that cool? It's that same notion. What you feed is what succeeds. So if you're eating a lot of sugar and your sugar fermenters are increasing, there is some research that suggests that they actually will toy with appetite and various things to make you crave sweets. You know? So it's pretty amazing. It's almost like, you know, who's the puppet master here?
Oh, man. Kim and East Troy, thanks a lot for calling. I hope that was helpful. I really appreciate your call. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions or comments. But you're sounding like you're talking about probiotics here. And I know you talk about probiotics and microbiotic infused skin care. Some of that may be good, but some of it may be hype as well.
Right. There's like hooey to the max in that industry. I mean, from what I can tell at this point is that probiotics are used in some clinical settings, like if you have certain kinds of diarrhea, and they can be very effective. So a probiotic is just live bacteria that you ingest in order to increase the population numbers. You know, one of the things is it's, you know, people get tied up with just thinking there's good bacteria and bad bacteria, and there really isn't. It's more like there's only bacteria in the wrong population numbers for the environment. So since that's the case, you know, we're kind of stuck saying, well, how much more what species do I need to reach my optimum health, when we're not exactly sure how to describe optimum health when it comes to the microbiome. So it's just very sketchy, and I think that a lot of manufacturers kind of take advantage of the fact that folks have a general idea that they're good for them, but they don't know why. Seems to me like, you know, what I do is I eat homemade yogurt and homemade sauerkraut, and I just fold in these fermented foods, which are full of the same type of bacteria that are in the probiotic yogurts and in the probiotic supplements. Only it's homemade. I know it's alive, and I just fold it into my diet.
Makes sense. Dave in Milwaukee has something for us. Dave, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, this is a wonderful opportunity. I'm visiting from Mongolia, and I'm very curious as to how to improve our diet. We have, for thousands of years, lived on protein, both meat and dairy products. no fruits, no vegetables, and I see now how bad that must be, and I'm wondering how to change our diet from the meat and dairy we've eaten for thousands and thousands of years to this new diet, all vegetable fruit, so that we don't live so terrible anymore.
Yeah.
And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for calling. Wow, Eugenia.
Well, I know. I've read a little bit about that, not in terms of the Mongolian populations, but in terms of Eskimo populations, which are meat-heavy diets. And there's, I'm trying to recall, but there's bacterial populations that they acquire that help them get as much nutrition out of the foods they eat. It's an evolutionary niche. You know, we acquire our microbiomes, A, from mom, and B, from our environment. So I don't know that the Mongolian diet is bad for, I mean, that doesn't really make so much sense to me. It seems like the Mongolian diet is one that has worked for the people in that environment for a long time. If I go to Mongolia with the ecology that exists in my gut, then I might have a pretty hard time getting proper nutrition from the diet, you know, and getting, I don't know, my serotonin made and stuff like that. But that, and the reverse might happen if someone from, you know, Mongolia came to New York City. So, but over time, if you're going to survive, one's microbiome would shift to accommodate the nutritional options that are available. So the whole thing about the Mediterranean diet, you know, I mean, to say that it's like what everybody should be doing, you know, I think, you know, that's, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go there. I don't have the authority to do it anyway. But I would suggest, I have read that the Western diet is heavy on processed foods and fats, and that may be why we have certain physical problems like obesity and diabetes, which we didn't have so much of before World War II, and that taking care of our fiber fermenters by eating like an apple a day, you know, is going to be actually going back to where we should have, to the state we should have stayed in all along, I think.
Well, I eat an apple every single day. Well I shouldn't say that. 5 days a week at least.
You know, it's great. Like, people take these prebiotic supplements, and it seems to me that, you know, that's just so silly. Why not just eat an apple?
Say, by the way, have you given copies of your book to the teachers that you had at Columbia?
I have sent a few copies, but I haven't heard from them. So I don't know if they've read them, if they've gotten to their piles. In the past, I'd given them my book on fungi, one of my teachers, and he showed me the pile of books that he had on his desk. And so I'm guessing, I'm hoping that they will read it or have read it, but I imagine there's quite a few volumes ahead of me in line for their attention.
Well, Eugenia, I tell you, it's really a very, very enjoyable book. I've loved reading it, and I thank you. And let's hope, you know, 2011 to 2018, let's hope we it's not 7 years before we talk again. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
Eugenia Bone is the author of Microbia, A Journey into the Unseen World Around You. It's a fascinating book, and it's, I tell you, laugh out loud funny in parts when she's talking about her experiences in classes at Columbia. Well, thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we'll have our outdoor writers back to talk about Wisconsin wildlife. In the meantime, lots more in store. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.